Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Grant Napier Show.
This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
This team, there he is again. My goodness.
Doug Christie, what a pass. Men against boys.
The Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
Crouches, gets a step to the baseline. Drives with the right hand. Oh, boy.
Now, Grant Napier.
Coming to you from Dallas, Texas. Doug will be with me in about 20 or 30 minutes. He had a prior commitment at the team hotel, media related. He will be with us here in just a little bit. Boy, what a crazy night for the Kings. First of all, they lose to the Lakers, so they start off this road trip with a loss against a bad team, and now they are in Dallas, but what a crazy schedule last night. The Kings played a 6:30 game, and then you get to LAX and getting into LAX and getting on the plane and getting out, even though we are a charter, is not the easiest thing in the world. And I put out on Twitter, I think I said wheels up at 1:17 a.m. Dallas time. And we got into our room. I think by the time I got my luggage and walked into my room, it was 4:42 in the morning. And the Kings obviously didn't do anything today. They had a day off. They need a day off. And if they didn't have a day off, it would have been a waste of a day on. And I got to tell you, I'm like, I just downed an energy drink. So I'm going to try to stay awake during this radio show. How's that for you? And let's hope that the Kings are awake when they play tomorrow. Well, how bad was that first quarter and the third quarter, at least the first 5 or 6 minutes last night against the Lakers? Really puzzling to me. The Kings just have not played well on the second night of back-to-backs this year. They're now 3-9. And the Lakers didn't even care last night until the game got to the fourth quarter. I was telling Doug during a commercial break in the middle of the second quarter, you could tell the Lakers didn't even really want to be on the floor. I mean, they weren't playing very well. The Kings could have easily built up a big lead on them, but they didn't play well. Plain and simple, they did not play well. Their shooting was horrible in the first quarter, and yet they were only down by 22-20. And then, you know, they found a way to take the lead in the second quarter after being down by, I think, I want to say 8 or 9, maybe even 10. They had a one-point lead at the half. And then in the third quarter, I mean, the Lakers come out and they get a 14-0 run. And to the Kings' credit, they were able to come back again, but just didn't have it down the stretch. Just did not have it down the stretch. Again, we talk about this night in, night out. I'm going to keep on talking about it, but Marvin Bagley is going to be a big-time star in this league. Big-time star. And again, last night, how about challenging LeBron James? That's pretty big time for a 20-year-old, a guy that just turned 20 a couple of weeks ago, having no issues guarding LeBron James and trying to score against him. When I mean no issues, you could see the confidence. You know, you could see how you could, you know, you look at the big picture with him, and the big picture is, oh boy, is he going to be good. He is going to be really, really good. All right, as always, we take your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. It was announced today by the National Football League that the Bears will open up at home this year against the Packers to celebrate the 100th anniversary, and what a rivalry that has been. And they have announced that the Patriots will open up on Sunday night. Opponent yet to be determined, or at least announced. So there you go. The NFL, we already know what the opening game is going to be, and it's not the Super Bowl champ. It is the Bears and the Packers in that longstanding rivalry. Speaking of the Patriots, you know the news is Rob Gronkowski said he is done. There had been some speculation a year ago, and then he came back. The speculation was he would play as long as Tom Brady is going to play. That obviously is not the case, as he comes out yesterday and tells everyone he is done. So we're going to talk about that. Obviously, the NCAA tournament down to the Sweet 16. And everyone talking about the game that was played involving Duke yesterday and how they were able to prevail. But not only were they able to prevail, but the biggest play of that game was on a missed free throw. And when you think about officiating, And the controversy that we always seem to have in these type of situations where an underdog is the one that's on the short end of the stick. UCF, with a golden opportunity to beat Duke, and there were two fouls, both by Duke, on the offensive rebound and the score that ended up being the winning basket. Two. One on each side of the lane, clear-cut fouls, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and they were not called. And so Duke goes on. I don't know if they were the better team yesterday, but they're playing. And Johnny Dawkins' team is not. But I'm just curious. You know, forget about your brackets for a minute. You know, I don't want you to call me up and tell me, well, I like to call because I had Duke. That's not what I want. How bad was that non-call in that situation? And you can't tell me, well, that happens all the time, because that does not happen all the time. Not only that, it was a big-time point of emphasis this year in college basketball on exactly what we were looking at. I mean, that's crazy. Sean Devaney, NBA reporter for Sporting News at 3:30, Iron Eagle at 5:30. We got A's baseball tonight at 6:30 as the season begins on Thursday. Of course, the A's already began the season, but opening day on Thursday. So we can talk about that as well. But again, that call, and we talk about this every year, and we get that. You know, listen, we know that the officiating in the world of sports is imperfect. I mean, go ask the New Orleans Saints. We get it. We understand. But how do you miss those type of calls in that type of situation? I don't understand that. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me. It is absolutely mind-boggling to me. And again, I don't care. I don't care who wins. I have zero rooting interest in those games. I don't care about my bracket. I don't care about who wins. I watch it for 100% purely an entertainment purpose. I don't watch it for any other reason. My bracket, I don't care whether I get it right or wrong. Makes no difference to me. But I'm watching that game. We were watching it in the press room, the media room, with about 50 people. And you should have seen the reaction in the media room on that play and then when they showed the replay. It's very unfortunate to see these type of games, especially when it's a tournament single elimination, come down to that. Because I don't know how else you could talk about that other than that was just an embarrassment. That was just horrible. And it seems like every year in this tournament, we are coming on all too often and we're talking about a terrible call. And in that case, I think there were two bad calls. And there is big time outrage from that. And make no mistake about it. And it should be. It should be. Matter of fact, I'll read you something. Because, you know, and listen, we know that everyone's going to have something to say about it. And that's the way it is. I mean, you should have something to say about it. I don't know how you can look at that and think that it was anything other than a big-time blown call. But think about some of the things you heard after the game. All right? Now, I always like to know, where's your information coming from? All right? Seth Greenberg said, and again, he's an ESPN analyst, former coach at Virginia Tech, said, quote, "I talked to two Final Four officials. They blew this call. That's the way it is. You look right here," talking about the free throw violation foul. "This is a point of emphasis in college basketball today. Hook and hold in free throw situations. That is a classic hook and hold. That's what they're looking for. That's what they're calling. That's why they go to the monitor. I've talked to multiple Final Four officials. There's no way that officiating crew will move on to the next round." That's from ESPN analyst Seth Greenberg. How about that? And again, tell me that CBS, TNT, How nervous do you think they are if Zion Williamson doesn't make it to the Sweet 16? Could you imagine the blow that would be to the ratings of this tournament? Because let's be honest here. He is the NCAA tournament. And without Zion Williamson, there are a lot of people that aren't watching it anymore. That's just the truth. Could you imagine the impact of the rest of this tournament if Duke had been upset and didn't even make it to the next round? That would be unbelievable. Seriously, that would have been incredible not to have them make it to the next round. All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Kings off until tomorrow. And I really don't know what effect getting in that late is going to have on a team with your body clocks. Probably not. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I'm not going to predict it. I'll just go through it and watch it. I can only tell you that, you know, just talking to some of the players today that I saw at the hotel, they were walking around like zombies. Absolutely crazy to be able to, you know, finally go to sleep at about 5 in the morning. And you can say, well, gee, Grant, you know, you don't play until tomorrow. It has nothing really to do with when you play. It's just the changing of your body clock. It's this, you know, it's why they call it jet lag. That's why when you travel internationally and you come back from, you know, a 10-hour, 12-hour, 14-hour flight, and the difference in time is 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 hours. You know, you don't just feel normal the next day or the following day. It does take some time. So, again, if you want to call, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. As we get down now to the Sweet 16, who are the teams that are going to advance and play in the Final Four? This thing is absolutely wide open. There have been no major upsets of the 1, 2, and 3 seeds. You know, we talk about, you know, who's going to be the Cinderella and where is it going to come from. Pretty interesting to see how this tournament has gone and now where we're heading as you look at this coming weekend upcoming. So if you are a big-time college basketball fan, or if you're a casual basketball fan and you just want to talk about what you saw over the weekend, then give me a shout, because I'm not really sure right now who you would consider the favorite. I mean, if you're, you know, most people that I've had on this show, I've asked their opinion how many teams you think are capable of winning the national championship, and most have said 8, 9, or 10. That's about it. Is Virginia capable? Yes. Michigan capable? Yes. Michigan State? Yes. Duke? Yes. North Carolina? Yes. Kentucky, yes. Would Gonzaga, yeah, I'd have to include them. So that's 7. Would I include Purdue? I don't know enough about Purdue, but I've had experts on this show with Doug, and they said, yes, they would include Purdue, so that's 8. Would a team like LSU or would Houston? I don't think that anyone would pick them. What about Tennessee? What a game they had yesterday, huh? Crazy. Stay prevailing over time. So I don't know. I just think there is no one great team in college basketball. I think we saw that yesterday with Duke. Obviously, they probably should have lost the game. I still don't know how they advanced, other than the fact that that was just a horrible, horrible missed call, not on just one instance, but 2. But I guess that's the way things go, right? I mean, we've all been through it here in Sacramento. We don't have to talk about bad officiating. We get that. But again, if that's a point of emphasis, like Seth Greenberg said, and on that situation it's not called, that is horrible. All right, I want to get back to the Kings for a minute, and then we will talk NBA basketball coming up at 3:30 with Sean Devaney. Also, Doug Christie will be coming here in just a little bit. The Kings' inability to play better or play well on the second night of back-to-backs is it because of youth? No, not my opinion. Is it focus? Well, they look focused to me. I don't know. I'll ask Doug when he gets here. We've talked about it. I'm very puzzled. I mean, the Lakers didn't play well last night, right? They had 22 points at the end of the first quarter. So what is it about the Kings on the second night of a back-to-back? Why is it that they are so bad? And that's what they are. They're bad. They're bad on second nights of back-to-back. Is it, I mean, last night in the first half, both De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield did not, I think they were combined 2 of 11 or 2 of 12 at one point. Marvin Bagley was the only guy at halftime that had a plus in the plus-minus column. Everyone else was a minus. Where do you look at the issues here with this team? Why are they so bad on the second night of back-to-backs? And they have another one coming up this weekend, and boy, is it a tough one at Houston and at San Antonio. And now, if you think of 41 and 41 being the goal, and that's what it is, you absolutely have to win the next two games. I mean, you have to. Then you have to win the home game against Cleveland. And you still have to win two more. So, not going to be easy. Let's get to some phone calls and start with Francisco. What's up, Francisco?
Hey, long-time listener. I was just wondering, like you said, if Duke doesn't go by, doesn't make it to the Sweet 16, it affects the ratings. So you think the referees know that beforehand and kind of favor them?
Well, sure, the officials all know what the deal is. I don't think there's any question about that. But then you would that you're basically asking me if the games are fixed, and I don't believe that the games are fixed. I don't believe that. But I mean, those were two, not only one, those were two calls that were missed in the most important play of the game, and it makes you raise your eyebrows. That's for sure.
But it happens in all sports, football, baseball. So I mean, it's not fixed all the way, but it kind of favors a certain team for the ratings, don't you think?
I don't know if it's that way in the NFL. In other words, that call that was made in New Orleans that benefited the Rams, that had no effect on the Super Bowl ratings. That was just an egregious call that was missed. I mean, again, officials are humans. They're not robots, and humans make mistakes. And I don't see how you could look at that game between UCF and Duke yesterday at the end on that missed free throw putback and say that wasn't a huge missed call. That was just an absolutely egregious missed call by the officials. So you make a good point, Francisco. Thank you very much for the call. Okay. Let's get to Rudy. Rudy, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Grant?
Man, what's up?
I can't believe I got to pretty quick here. Grant, yeah, I had just two quick questions. The first one, I didn't get to see the Duke game, but I just heard you mention that there was two blown calls on that game alone.
On one play, on the missed free throw at the end of the game, Duke was down by one. Zion Williamson was at the line trying to make a three-point play after driving and getting fouled. And then he missed a free throw. Duke got the offensive rebound and scored to go up by one, which was the winning basket. And on the replay, it showed that Duke players on each side of the lane both committed fouls to get the offensive rebound. One was a lock on the arm, and the other one was a push in the back.
Unbelievable. Tell me this, Derek. Duke's coach, did he mention anything about them fouls of him seeing that?
No.
He didn't mention nothing there at press conference about
I didn't hear his entire press conference. I mean, you know, listen, Mike Krzyzewski.
I had to work, so I missed it, man. But, God, man, that's crazy.
Yep. Thanks for the call, man. Man. I appreciate it very much. Have a good afternoon. All right, let's get to Grant on Sports 1140. Hey, Grant, what's going on?
Hey, Grant, how you doing?
Good.
Doing great. I just wanted to chime in about the Kings' back-to-back woes. I know you're probably going to disagree with me on this, but I think it does have to do with the youth, not so much inexperience of them as basketball players, but more so their physical capabilities at their age. I kind of compare it to a while back when we played the Nuggets and Marvin having the matchup with Jokic. It was just it's very clear that he's only 19 at the time, just has some maturing to do. I think that in a year or two when these guys' bodies just get a little bit more meat on them and they get a little bit more durable, that this 3-9 situation that we're in right now won't really be a problem.
And I understand where you're coming from, but I'm now going to come at you this way, and I'd love to know what you have to say. The Kings had 20 points in the first quarter, and they started the third quarter by allowing the Lakers to go on a 14-0 run. Their starting lineup has a 21-year-old point guard, a 26-year-old shooting guard, a 28-year-old small forward, a 30-year-old power forward, and a 26-year-old center. That's not young.
No, I agree with you there, but I don't believe the Lakers were playing a back-to-back last night like we were. I also think that these guys just need to gel a little bit more, and we'll have a much more competent team on back-to-back nights in a couple years. I mean, our team's just so young and so full of talent. We have a great coach. I think we just it's so hard to be patient now that we've been on this playoff drought for going on 13 years now. It's really hard for Kings fans. You just got to stay patient just a little bit more. These guys will gel. Their bodies will mature. Their games will mature. And we're gonna have one of the best teams in the West for the next half decade or more.
I you know what, Grant? You and I are on the 100% thinking alike. Maybe it's because our name's Grant. But I totally am with you. I think this absolutely. I think this team is going to be an upper echelon team for many years to come in the very near future, barring injury, which I can't forecast. But Vlade's not done adding to this team. He's going to add to this team this summer. He knows what he needs, and he's going to go out and make it happen. And I think this team next year is going to win close to 50 games. I really believe that.
I'm right there with you, man. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. All right, let's move right along with Randy. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Grant. How you doing, man?
I'm well.
Hey, I kind of want to just call you out on a couple things. One, and before I say that, I love your show.
Thank you.
I love you. You're a good job. But, you know, objectively, the Kings need that third player, and I know you disagree, and I'm patient. I'm 30 years in. However, we do need that. I need to hear the Sacramento local guys like you talk about how we need to get another major impact player. What are your thoughts?
I disagree with you. When you say major impact player, I think if you took the word major out, then you and I would agree. But I don't think they need a major impact player because I think they already have those players on the roster. They just have not yet had enough experience to become major impact players. And one is De'Aaron Fox and the other is Marvin Bagley. They both will be, in my opinion, major impact players in the very near future. Buddy Hield is already there in terms of what he does for the team. They will add to this roster, but major impact? No, I don't think they need a major impact player. I just think they need a center, a player at the five position that they can count on every night that will have an impact on the overall well-being of the team because of consistency, but not a major impact.
But don't you agree that we do need to get an impact player to the caliber that I'm trying to emphasize to get to the third round or the finals? I mean, just to
Randy, you already have those players on the team. They're De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley. Steph Curry wasn't an impact player when he was 20 years old or 21 years old. Kevin Durant wasn't a major impact player at age 20 and 21. You have to allow it to happen. You just can't take someone that's 19 and 20 years old and think that they're going to be a major impact player before they're old enough to go out and buy a drink at a bar. All right, you must allow it to happen. I mean, the Kings have those players on their roster, in my opinion. I think the Kings right now have a minimum of two All-Stars on their roster currently.
I think I would agree with Fox and Bagley. I get it. I know where you're going, and I like that. However, I'm trying to get to the point. I'm not asking for Fox to be the superstar he's going to be. I like where he's doing. He contributes substantially throughout the season. What I'm trying to say is if we had that third or number one guy, the number one guy, along with Fox and Bagley, then I think we have a potential to get deep into the playoffs.
Well,
I'm not just trying to talk about getting into the playoffs. I want to win.
I don't think you're looking at this the right way. I think you're completely.
This is where we have this battle. This is where we have the battle.
That's okay. Hey, you know what? That's why you call the show and I have a show. I don't say I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying, in my opinion, you're not looking at this the right way. In my opinion, you're undervaluing De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley. We haven't even brought up the name Buddy Hield. In my opinion, you're looking at this roster and you're undervaluing the players that you're referring to. De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley will be those guys. You understand if you get that player that you are referring to, there's still only one basketball to go around, correct? I think you already have those players on the roster, Randy.
Well, listen, I respectfully disagree, but let's see what happens in the offseason. I think they did a dramatic improvement, but I think you have to look objectively and go, yeah, we need some more muscle. I'm not just saying to make the playoffs. I'm saying to get deep and get to beat Houston or beat someone who's deep in that playoff
world. I don't disagree. I think the Kings do need more muscle, but they don't need a major impact player. I got to go, but thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Thank you. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. Back with you here on Sports 1140 KHDK. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Sean Devaney, Sporting News, covering the NBA. Sean, it's always good to talk to you. It's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
I'm doing well, Grant. How are you?
Doing good. Help me out with what is going on in the East, because I'm really confused right now. I'm still waiting for a team to emerge, and I'm concerned about the injuries that the Bucks have, particularly to Malcolm Brogdon. I'm still waiting for the Celtics to find another signature victory after what they did in Oakland a couple of weeks ago, and they haven't been able to do that. I look at Philadelphia's roster, and I'm like, wow, that's as good as anyone. Sort this out for me, and I haven't even mentioned Toronto yet.
Yeah, I mean, and Toronto in the end might be the best of the bunch, you know, because when you look at all the factors you kind of need when you're heading into the playoffs, you want to be healthy, you want to have some depth, you want to have some chemistry that you're starting to form, and you're hitting your stride a little bit. I think right now Toronto has probably got the best mix of all, even though, you know, they've had their struggles certainly as well. But, you know, when you look at the talent level, when you look at the way the chemistry has been throughout the year, you know, they're probably the best set up here. Everybody else really does have a bit of an Achilles heel. You know, Celtics have just had such terrible chemistry, and every time they get a win like the one you mentioned against Golden State, they've done it against Toronto, they've done it again. You know, they've had a number of wins where you say, okay, this is the team that's ready to turn the corner, and then they turn the corner and they trip and fall flat on their faces. That's been consistent all year with them. You know, Philadelphia, as good as their starting five is, their bench is just not there, and you have to wonder, in the playoffs, will that matter or not? If it doesn't matter, then, you know, Philadelphia could be a more dangerous team than they're probably getting credit for. Milwaukee, you mentioned the injuries. I also think their reliance on the three-point shot and some of the things they do defensively, you know, especially with Brooke Lopez out there, can be exposed a little bit. You know, I think Milwaukee, I would put them behind Toronto. But I think the Raptors are probably the team that's the best set up right now.
You know, Sean, early on I told Grant I really thought that the Boston Celtics were going to be able to be the team that would be dealt with coming out of the Eastern Conference. Well, if it's coaching, if it's Kyrie Irving leadership, how do you see that dynamic playing out in the inability, as you mentioned, to have that type of consistency that you need?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at some point somebody needed to step in and really take charge of this team, whether it was Brad Stevens or Kyrie Irving or somebody else. You know, I mean, Marcus Morris tried to do it with some of the things he said, but, you know, you can't necessarily have a role player, even a veteran like him, as good as he's been this year. You know, you really needed to be the coach. You needed to be one of the leaders on the team, and they really needed it to be one of those two guys, Brad Stevens to Kyrie Irving. And I think what we've seen is neither one of them have shown, you know, a real leadership quality for an NBA team. Of course, Brad Stevens, you know, we know what he's done on the college level. We know what he's done on the NBA level with teams that were sort of scrappy and overachieving. When you have the stars and you hit adversity, you've got to find, if you're the coach, you've got to find a way to make sure your locker room is okay. And it just hasn't been all year. And of course, you could say the same thing about Kyrie Irving. If you're the leader, you've got to be in there and you've got to take more responsibility. You've got to not point fingers. Kyrie has spent much of the year pointing fingers at first at the young guys. The other night it was at the coach. You know, this is not a team that's stacked with leadership right now.
Sean, I don't know if anyone really knows the answer to my next question, but do you feel that the Raptors, their playoff success or lack thereof, will factor into what Kawhi Leonard does after this season?
Oh, absolutely. I really do think that if they get to the conference finals, then they've got a chance to keep them. If they do what they've done in past years and fall flat, you know, if they lose in the conference semifinals, and you look at the matchups, they certainly could. You know, there's those top four teams that we're talking about in the East, and no disrespect to Indiana, but, you know, they've played over their heads. But, you know, Celtics, Philly, Milwaukee, and Toronto, you know, that second round of the playoffs should be really, really compelling. And certainly you could imagine Toronto getting a matchup that doesn't work out well and they wind up losing. I think that really does put them on thin ice in terms of their ability to keep him. If they make a run for the finals, it would be really hard for him to walk away from that. Everybody knows he wants to go back
home to Southern California. But if you have the opportunity to win there, that's going to be something that this playoffs will really go a long way to determining how he views what the future is going to be like in Toronto. So I do think that that they could certainly help their case, but it's going to take at least a trip to the conference finals, probably a trip to the finals.
Sean, when you think about MVP race, it's coming down to James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo. James Harden, game ago, 61 points. Giannis has been very consistent all year. Which way are you leaning in that one?
Yeah, probably James Harden. I go back and forth on that. Certainly if you factor in defense, then you've got to give Giannis the edge. But Giannis has a big part of his game that is missing, and that's the perimeter shot that's so important in today's game. So you could make a case that each of those players has something that's sort of missing in his game. But I think right now for Houston to be where they are, there have been stretches, of course, where James Harden has just completely carried them himself. Now, where they are now is you have to give Daryl Morey a lot of credit for the way he restructured their bench, the guys that he brought in. They certainly had to withstand some injuries. But James Harden has been the consistent line through all that that's gotten them. If they wind up with the number three seed, which they probably will, they're just a hair above Portland right now, then you've got to give James Harden a lot of credit. So I think it's still something that I still have a couple weeks to make up my mind. And if you ask me tomorrow, I might say something different. But right now, I'd say I'm leaning toward James Harden.
All right, let's go out west, Sean, and talk about the Warriors. And they've had so many unusual bad losses lately. And then it's almost like, well, when they want to play, then they look like they're unbeatable. Are they consistent enough right now, or does it really not even matter? Do they look like a team that's just bored and can't wait for the playoffs to begin? What's your read on this team?
Yeah, but I do get a sense that there is something. I mean, that was the case last year, that they were bored and waiting for the playoffs. And you look at their defensive numbers, they weren't a great defense. I think they were 11th in defensive efficiency last year. Playoffs came and they were first, and they were easily first. And you can imagine, I think they're 13th this year, and you can imagine them kicking in the defense again once the playoffs start. But you do get the sense that there's, and certainly people in the organization have talked about this, that there is something a little different about this team, that they've had a sort of enough of each other, that everybody, after so long together does sort of chafe. And I think you're starting to see that leak out onto the court, that some of the chemistry isn't right. Having said that, who's going to beat them? That's the big question. Is they look more beatable than they have in the last 3 years, certainly. But who's going to actually do it? I think Houston is probably the team that has the best chance. I'm not sure anybody else really in a 7-game series is going to be able to beat the Warriors. So, they're probably a team that, to use a cliche, is the only team that can beat them is themselves. But certainly they've looked more beatable than they have in recent years.
Sean, for a large portion of this year, everyone was thinking the Denver Nuggets, who are now in second in the Western Conference. They've kind of been up and down, 7-3 in their last 10, with the exception of the thrashing that they took from the Indiana Pacers last night. When you look at this team, do you think they're a year away? They're a little ahead of schedule? Are they a piece away? How do you see the Nuggets team?
Yeah, and Mike Malone has been pretty forthcoming about that, where he said, we thought we would take a step this year. I don't think that they thought that, a realistic chance at the number one seed in the Western Conference is where they were going to come down. But they've certainly taken a big step. I do think that they don't have the experience level they need to handle the postseason. And I do think that they'll come up against some teams that do. This is something that they were expecting in terms of improvement. I don't think they expected to improve quite as much as they have. Still a lot of young guys. I think them getting into the playoffs, probably getting a first round win, getting into the second round, I think that'll be promising building block for, you look at the age of those guys. Jokic, as good as he is, he's still only 23. Gary Harris is 24. Jamal Murray, 21. So, you're looking at their top players still in their early 20s. I think just getting a taste of the playoffs is something that they're going to build off of in coming years.
Sean, Coach of the Year, I think Mike Budenholzer, I think Nate McMillan's done a marvelous job with Indiana, but could you make a case that this is Doc Rivers' best coaching job?
Yeah, and it's really remarkable that they just find ways to keep winning. This reminds me more of remember when Doc Rivers really cut his teeth in the NBA was that Orlando team in 2000. Before they went and got Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill. This is that kind of team where it's just scrappy. There's certainly a talent level. I don't want to say that there's no talent there, but they've got a lot of guys who just make things difficult on you, and then they can find a guy like Lou Williams or Gallinari who can deliver some offensive some real offensive late game dramatics and can make the shots that can deliver you the win. But they've got a lot of guys defensively. Guys like Harrell, certainly Patrick Beverley, who can really make things difficult on opponents, and that's the kind of team that Doc Rivers really likes, yep. And he seems to be in his element with these guys.
And a rookie point guard in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I'll tell you, when you go back to when we started talking about the draft in May, and then the actual draft in June, the forecast was this would be a really good draft, particularly at the top, that there were some big time players, and boy, has it panned out that I got to tell you. You look at what Luka's doing with Dallas. The Kings are beyond thrilled with Marvin Bagley. Personally, I think he's going to be a superstar, and so does Doug. Jaren Jackson, you talk about Trae Young. I mean, you can go now look at Gilgeous-Alexander. Boy, this class is really good, aren't they?
Yeah, and what's funny is that after the first, month or month and a half, it was sort of Luka and everybody else. And what's happened since then is that we've seen a lot of these guys kind of get their sea legs, get accustomed to the physicality. I was looking at numbers since the All-Star break. We've got four rookies, including Luka, averaging 20-plus points since the All-Star break. You've got Bagley, of course, and he's shooting 53% from the field, 44% from the three-point line. Colin Sexton, he had a real rough start. He has completely changed the way he's played. He's gotten rid of the mid-range jumper and has moved his game out to the three-point line. He's shooting 45% from the three-point line, averaging 20 points since the All-Star game. Of course, Trae Young, if you've been watching any basketball lately, what he's done, averaging 25 points since the All-Star game, and doing it with pretty efficient shooting. He's above 40% from the three-point line. So, yeah, it's just funny how the perception has changed from, say, mid-December to now this class, you see just how good it was.
Sean, great stuff. It's always great for you to share your time with us. We greatly appreciate it. Be well.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Sean Devaney from the Sporting News. Doug Christie and I will be right back on Sports 1140 KHDK. Our thanks to Sean Devaney. Doug Christie, as you know, is in studio with me. And, Doug, I was talking in the first part of the show about last night's game, but I was also talking about how many people were in the media room watching the end of that Duke Central Florida game and the two missed calls on the missed free throw by Zion Williamson, one on each side of the lane. And you've been through this before as a player. That never leaves you, man. I mean, that will never leave those players. That's a single elimination game, and the officials missed two fouls on that putback by Barrett that gave Duke the win.
Yeah, those are the – I'd have to go back and look at it, how egregious they were. But I would say if it's not so crazy, I like the fact that you allow the players to dictate the outcome as opposed to calling a ticky-tack foul. I want to say I saw earlier this year Tennessee, I believe. I can't remember who they lost, but there was a call at the end of that game. They gave free. It was Tennessee-LSU. Gave LSU the win. They go to the line. They make some free throws, and it was like a 60 feet away from the bucket. At the other end of the floor, kind of out of control foul. But you're right, Grant. It's like if this, if that. How about the fact if Taco doesn't foul Zion right before that. That's only foul number four, and he's still in the game, probably blocks that shot. But that is the madness that is March, man. A lot of fun.
All right, if you want to call the show, again, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. 11:40. Grant Napier and Doug Christie. And don't forget the A's. We have them coming up tonight right here on Sports 11:40 KHDK. And basically the season is going to begin on Thursday, even though they opened up in Japan. But I'll show this to you here, and there's an interesting angle that I don't know if you saw or not, and I'll let you but what I'm talking about here is, and I got to know we're on radio, but this is for your, on the lane, on each side of the lane, there was an arm lock to the left and a push in the back to the right on the putback. Yeah. And so, you know, again, I mean, I thought, and it's been a big talk today, that they missed two fouls on that. And that one on the left, the arm lock, was a point of emphasis this year in college basketball.
Yeah, as I look at that, though, Grant, listen, this is for all the marbles. It's going to get physical. If a guy pushes you underneath the basket, it should be more egregious than that, in my opinion. You're going to have to stand your ground for that one. So, yeah, did they miss something? Yeah, they did. You missed something on every play. Okay. That one doesn't kill me is what I'm saying. Listen, you box that guy out. I don't care what you got to do. You make sure it happens.
Trey, you're on with Grant and Doug. Hi, Trey.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
What's up?
So I got a question. You know, we probably heard a report that Doc Rivers got an extension. I was wondering if you guys can kind of give us a feel of what's going on with Dave Yeager. We've been around the coaching carousel quite a few times, you know, with a lot of different guys, and it'd be kind of a shame that if he didn't get a contract extension, because I think he could be coach of the year, you know, next year or the year after that.
Well, he's got 1 year left on his deal right now, and so generally coaches that get or entering the final year of the contract either get an extension or they're replaced, and I'm using that just in recent history with other teams. So, you know, I know that Vladdy has said this, and I think he said it as recently as 3 weeks ago. Nothing's going to happen until the end of the regular season and whether he gets a new deal or not, because Vladdy was asked if he's going to extend Dave Yeager, and he said, well, I can't do anything until I get a new deal. And so I don't even know what's going on with that. I haven't talked to Vladdy about whether he's getting a new deal, and if so, when it would be. But none of that can happen until the organization decides what they're going to do with the general manager. And then I would assume, and again, I'm assuming that Vladdy's going to get a new deal. And at that point, he's got to make a decision whether he wants to give the coaching staff a long-term deal or go in a different direction. I can't answer that. I haven't talked to Vladdy about the coaching, nor will I. It's crossing the line for me, even though I'm friends with Vladdy. So I don't know. We'll wait and see until whether he gets a deal first. And once he gets a deal, then he's got to make that decision.
Okay, that sounds great. I mean, like I said, I mean, I just think he deserves a chance. And you guys were talking about, you know, Mike Malone. I just want to see another Mike Malone situation, because that was, you know,
This would not be a Michael Malone situation. I mean, I think Dave will be back, but he's completing his third year. That's not a Michael Malone situation.
Okay, now can I ask you this question?
Yes.
If he isn't brought back, how does that affect the fan base that actually, you know, kind of said, all right, we'll trust him, Vladdy, do the right thing? Are we still trusting him, Vladdy, and how does that affect the players?
I don't think it affects the fan. Maybe I'm naive and not looking at this the way I should, and if I am, you can tell me, and I'm sure my other listeners will. I don't think it affects the fan base at all, because, I mean, the fan base, you know, whether they like a coach or don't like a coach, they're going to react on how the team plays once the new season begins, whether Dave Yeager's the coach or Phil Jackson comes back and coaches the team. If the team plays well, they're going to be happy, and if the team doesn't play well and doesn't win, they're going to be very upset. All right, thanks for the call. First hour in the books. We will come right back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK.